to this week's episode of Education Transformation, hosted by Lee and Kate Ridge. In this episode, we're revisiting one of our earlier guests' episodes. Lee, what's this episode about?
It's fantastic, Kate. It's a really good time to go back approximately 12 months ago and revisit a previous discussion we've had with a guest, Helen Cherry, in relation to her experience of working within Afghanistan in adult education. So a really timely discussion, I think, because so many people gave so much, both local staff and also international expats, demonstrated for, you know, a considerable amount of time, the best part of that 20-year period, a commitment to enhancing the livelihoods through education with regards to the Afghan people.
It's really sad to see the hardships that's happening at the moment and in Afghanistan. So I think you're right. It's really important to remember all the sacrifices and effort and joy that has come for people over those years as well.
Indeed. And look, the discussion that Helen raises resonates today, 12 months on, because it still offers hope. You know, it still offers hope to the Afghan people because of the considerable commitment that the local staff and the international expats contributed together and collaborated together on significant projects that were well beyond security issues. So education program that Helen is speaking of, she speaks about a national program where at one point they gathered 800 education directors together. So, you know, obviously quite a significant program with a real impact across the nation.
And I really enjoy how she highlights that international development is around capacity development and building skills so that they stay for the long term. It's not just a short-term project.
Absolutely. So please sit back, take a listen to this really important conversation, given the context in which our world is in at the moment. And it's great to take an opportunity to reflect upon the commitment of these individuals. So Helen, thanks so much for joining us for this insightful conversation. It's going to be fantastic. There's so much to discuss and there's so much colour associated with your career. Looking back, reflecting, what is the catalyst for your first role within international development? So you're suggesting, you were saying that Afghanistan was the country.
Yeah.
That's a fairly radical step to take.
Yeah, but it was in my soul. It was in my heart. It was in my soul. And when I saw the advertisement come up, it felt good. And I spent, when I was in, I lived in Omaha, Nebraska for a while, and those long winter nights, I read all the Flashman series, and they were all set in Afghanistan in the Khyber Pass, and I don't know, the boys' own stuff.
Yep.
I just wanted to go.
Yeah.
And
wonderful.
It just felt right.
Good.
Yeah.
So you arrive in Afghanistan. You take us through that process. Like you're heading into Afghanistan, the landing gear is coming down on the plane, and in you go. What are your thoughts? What are your feelings?
Oh my God! The first one was, how the hell do I get this scarf to stay on my head? Oh dear!
A lot to learn.
Oh, there's a lot to hold on to. You've got to keep your coat on. You've got to keep your scarf on. You've got to make sure you don't lose your passport.
Yeah,
oh,
sure.
Oh my goodness! Sure. And then I was standing in line at immigration, looking at my future countrymen, thinking, "Wow, this is my new life." And as you know, Lee, airports in developing countries are not very they're very basic. So there's a lot of time to just stand there and look around. I finally got through immigration, found, you know, sort of pushed my way through to get my bag and off we went. So I was lucky. I was with my team leader and another manager and they'd both been in Afghanistan. So you never leave an airport without your security. So he waited for the security to turn up and they had these rather large AK-47s and I thought, oh, okay. So we walked through several car parks because there's a lot of layers when it comes to security. So there's no way there's any cars except maybe the president's that's going to come in close to the airport. So we walked through several car parks through the layers of security, and there it was. There was our two four-wheel drive armoured vehicles waiting for us with more security people in their car keys and their guns, I think their AK-47s. And I thought, oh, yeah, this is okay. The scarf hasn't fallen off. I've managed to get my bags here. I'm well covered. The sun's out. It's a bit dusty, but okay. And then they said, well, has everyone been here before? And I said, no. And then we went into the detailed, the detailed instructions. Oh, my God. Holy. I just went, what have I done? Oh, my God, I can't even get back to the terminal.
Yes, yes. It's pretty serious. Yeah.
This is a worry. And we got detailed instructions on how long it's going to take, what roads we're going to take, what the security situation's like today, what we can expect, the worst that we can encounter, what we do if, you know, we're hit by another car, what we do here, what, you know, what we do there. And I'm thinking, I don't know if I can continue to stand up. My legs are shaking too much. How am I going to do this? So there was two vehicles and three of us. So I'm thinking, which guy am I going to sit next to? I thought, the team leader. I'm going with that car, that's for sure. So off we went. And looking out of the vehicle, it was dusty. Because it was the airport, there was a main road coming into the airport with lots of signs. There was women in burqas, men in shalwar kameez and bakuls there, and lots of sheep, and just a mix mash of lots of things and cars and vehicles and armored vehicles and, you know, sort of ratty old taxis and all sorts of things. And then we finally got to shops and houses. The houses are concrete and square. And I thought, this reminds me of my backpacking days in India and Pakistan. I calmed down, and then we went straight to the donors meeting, and that was much more normal, even though we had to go through lots of security. You know, there was the coffee pot. Everyone was dressed nicely, and we went straight into the meeting. And so then I was focused. That first day, oh my God. But it was, you know, when you know that you've made a good decision about what you want to do in your career, you just know that it'll work out somehow.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's good. You had that self-assurance.
Indeed.
Yeah. One thing I admire many things about you, Helen, but one of the things is I highly respect how you adapt to cultural differences, and you highly respect those differences in host countries in which you work. So how did you adapt your leadership style in a country like Afghanistan?
Good question. Well, I mean, Lee, as you know, we all have we have our traits and our values that we take with us, and then it's really our communication and the way we behave externally that people see. So, I mean, my workplace values are always much the same. I mean, they change a little bit, but my workplace values, and that's what comes through to people, I think, it's always about passion. I tend to stay in jobs that I'm very passionate about. I think it's really important that we value people, and we try to be very measured and not let our emotions run away with us as we walk down that path of leading and making the project work. And I think it's really important. I think integrity and ethics are really important, particularly working in the development context, because I think it's very easy to go in and just do a, like, impose what you know from home and just say, well, this is the way it's going to be. but it's always about reflecting on, like, assessing the situation and working out where they're at, and what we need to do to get to our outcomes, and in doing that, what sort of capacity needs to be developed. I mean, I think, you know, I'm very aware of the qualities of a leader, and I'm always trying to work on those. I mean, nobody's perfect. Communication, I think, is integral, and I wouldn't, and that's a continuous area that I'm always working on. So generally when I go into countries, I don't have any language, or I might have done a little bit of self-teaching before I go in. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is about observing the culture and how people interact, looking at the layers in the culture from, you know, the leaders, say the leaders in the Afghan culture, the teacher, mm-hmm. you know, the DG, the directors, the teachers, etc., and looking at, and the gender, and just looking at the way they interact and how their language works. So, you know, like, for example, I hadn't realised it, but Afghans are very loud when they speak, and they, and when they're greeting, they actually speak over each other. So, but there's a whole joy and warmth that you can see. And you can see the difference between the way the females and the males interact, and, of course, the difference between the ethnicities. So that gives a bit of a clue into how you can, I can operate in that culture, get us to our outcomes, respect people, and have them respect me back, and together we move forward. So I think that one way when we're working together is having assessed the skill set. Like, for example, in Afghanistan, I was thrust into the last of a phase of a project, so it was ongoing. So we had to do a huge practicum of 80 teachers coming back in from, and they're lecturers from the teacher training colleges. They're not teachers in the classroom as such, the high schools. They were coming back in from Malaysia, and then there was a whole process of practicums in Kabul, and then going out to teacher training colleges to practice skills. And so we had about 500 or 600 coming in from the provinces. There's 34 provinces in Afghanistan. So we were able to collect data, and getting ready for that, one of the key issues that I noticed was that we didn't have good templates for actually analysing our data. So every morning the team and I met, and I had, at the beginning, I had about 6 or 8 translator interpreters that grew to about 10 when we got busy. So we met, and we actually, and I had a team as well, an administrative team. We met every morning, and we looked at what we wanted to get out of, like when we held our practicum, what sort of data we'd be looking for, and how we were going to actually dissect that, and what sort of templates we needed to set up. So it was a good way to get to know the team. We met every morning at 8:30. We looked at where we were at, where we needed to go. And at the end of the day, those, my team would take skills out of it. And I think that's essential. You know, I mean, we'll always leave a country. Well, I will anyway. I don't know about you, but I'll always come back to Australia. So at the end of it, I mean, we want our teams to be able to, and the people that we're actually impacting upon, to build their skills, to feel confident, empowered, and to be able to take things forward when we're gone. So while a project might finish, they will come out of that project with skills that they can share with other projects that will help them set up their own business or go into, you know, get other jobs.
So very much about patience and collaboration. In regards to your approach for their not just delivering outcomes, but supporting individuals to achieve those goals.
Yeah, and Lee, as you know, it's a real servant sort of leadership role. Working in Afghanistan, there was a guided democracy side to it because you have to produce the outcomes. And, you know, we have many masters. We have, I had at that stage, it was a trilateral project. So we had three governments involved, the Teacher Education Department, and the teacher training colleges and the directors from those. And of course the teacher training college lecturers, so as well as emerging leadership program. So we were working with a different part of the teacher education department when we were doing the training needs analysis for the female leadership program. It was an emerging leadership project, but yes. You know, we started the project with one teacher training college female director, and by the end we had another two as directors in the smaller colleges in the satellite campuses, basically.
Okay. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Good achievement. What about the learning environment for adult education? What's it like in the classroom?
Well, this was the purpose of the project, to introduce innovative teaching styles. So it's a very didactic lecturer approach, even for grade one. Okay. So I suppose M&E, monitoring and evaluation, was always part of reflecting and monitoring on how we're going, and how the people that we're working with are benefiting from the projects and how we can adjust. Perhaps I'll just reflect some of the comments that came from people that were on the course. We were talking to some of the lecturers from the Afghan teacher training colleges when we were in Malaysia, because that project had 3 months in teacher education institutes in Malaysia before they came back to Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And we were sitting there one day and they had conversation with the student teachers from Malaysia in English. And I said to one of the Afghan participants, you know, what do you think that you'll take from this? And he said, well, first of all, he said, I know that we do question and answer, that I listen to my students and listen to their questions and answer them. And another one said, and this wasn't the same conversation, but another one said to me, before I went on this course and I was in Malaysia, he said, I wasn't going to educate my girls. But he said, I realise that educating women's very important. So he said, and I'm also now giving my time at the mosque to teach the females. So I think coming back to what the classrooms are like in Afghanistan, they're moving and at a rapid pace from this very sort of lecturer approach to teaching to a much more learner-centered approach. One of the teacher education department used to provide our translator interpreters to us. So they were academics, basically, from the teacher training colleges. So one of the guys that was working in the Nangarhar Teacher Training College and our lead interpreter said to me one day, you know, Helen, he said, when we first started teaching these new approaches and putting up posters in the classroom and making materials out of whatever we could find, he said, you know, the parents didn't want their daughters and sons to come into our classrooms. They thought it was a bit strange. And he said, you know, but we're on this project, so we're pushing along. And he said, we after a while, everyone was working out that these student teachers of ours are having fun in the classroom and they're actually getting really good grades. So he said, now everyone's pushing to come into the classrooms of these lecturers that were trained under our program that we were calling master teacher trainers because we were using them then to do training in Afghanistan. Yes. And he said, so now there's a bit of jealousy amongst the lecturers. So he said, it's a bit problematic now.
Wow.
He said, we've got too much interest.
It's a good problem to have, yeah.
Yeah. But then, of course, you know, as you always, as you know, I met you and you taught me very much about community of practices. And so that was one thing that we did do with our project in Afghanistan. And I can't claim that I set that up. I just took it a bit further. It was an initial idea from someone else. Sure. But the end of every year, we brought all the graduates from the lecturers program. They were the teacher training college lecturers in literacy and religious education. The directors from the colleges, the mentors, and they're probably in some cultures called inspectors, from the teacher education department, and all the directors from the teacher education department together. So there was like 800 of them, and you know, pulled the walls down from hotels and, you know, set up a secure environment. And they reflected on their practice. The directors reflected on how the new training innovation was happening in their classrooms. The lecturers were reflecting on their practices and how they could improve it and sharing their ideas across the other colleges. And then we mixed everybody up. So I think there's movement. They're coming out of, as you know, a low base, but yes. And there's other projects working in the school sector. Of course, you know, there's the UN is working in the peace area, education for peace. So there's a lot of coming together, but the reflection was time for everyone to reflect on their practice. We learnt that some of the directors were putting out newsletters with ideas about what to do in the classroom. Some of them were going out to the villages and talking to the elders, the leaders, about whether they should be suggesting that they send their daughters to teacher training college. I mean, the interesting thing about Afghanistan is that it is so diverse between the south and the north. So the sharing of ideas and the reflection is so important.
What about the day-to-day life in Afghanistan and what you did with your downtime when you were able to escape work?
Oh, it's very hard to escape work, Lee, because the first year we lived across the road from where we worked across the road from where we live. So that was easier to escape because we couldn't get out of our compound without, you know, going through security levels. But the last 18 months was they built a door between our accommodation and our offices so we could go backwards and forwards anytime we liked.
Oh, that's nice. So no need to escape work.
No. And they even put a bridge between the buildings, you know, across the roofs in case we had to sort of move quickly. So there was no escape. But Friday was our day off. Oh, my God, I love Fridays. Some of the best days in terms of downtime. We had to put in a movement request at least 24 hours. The first year we were really lucky. On a Friday morning we could go to a breakfast place that we could sit out in the garden and there was roses and we could sit when the grapes were growing, we could sit under the arbor, and in the winter we could sit by the fire. Unfortunately, lovely. The second year there was a lot of lockdown. So when we emerged from weeks of lockdown, we only had two places to go and they were big compounds. So the one that I chose was the one with the rose garden.
If you had one success story, and this is probably going to be a little bit challenging, but if you had one success story to come out of Afghanistan, what would it be, do you think?
Oh, look, I think, I mean, it's more global. It's not a particular specific thing. But I think the success stories to me is through feedback. And when we were setting up the sustainability, when the project was closing, I was meeting with all the players, the stakeholders in the sector, and talking about how they could utilise our master teacher trainers. And the feedback that we got from the UN, from other projects working in our space was, look, we always know, like if we've got a project on and we have to get trainers, we always know the ones that have come through your project because they stand out, they use learner-centered approaches, they come up with ideas on how to deliver. So I think, you know, the success is in the people that work with them, that want to use them.
Yes, yes, exactly right.
So, Kate, what did we gather from that discussion?
Well, she certainly had some tough and wonderful experiences. I really found beneficial her take on servant leadership, because that's very much, I guess, you know, I tend to agree with that. That's how we should approach any international development and even education. It's about empowering other people and, you know, giving of yourself so that they can actually become better, more knowledgeable, more skilled, and able to actually be able to drive their own futures.
Yes, their own agendas, that's right. So you can come in with the expertise, but you need to be willing to adapt to meet the goals of both the donor agencies, but also the people in the communities. It's so important to not arrive with your own agenda, but to work with those individuals and those communities, because ultimately that's true sustainability, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so those groundworks have been laid, that foundation has been laid, and that's why there's real hope for the future. Although there's turmoil at the moment, we hope and pray that into the future there's also sustainability and there's that positive infrastructure that was the foundation of the past 20 years continues to develop the nation moving forward. But as you said, servant leadership, respectful communities of practice, so important. We've seen communities of practice initiate significant change time and time again, because it is exactly that. It's about listening to local people, the local context, whether it's in development work or whether it's within your own nation. It's a matter of just being respectful, sharing views, developing consensus and moving forward, and that way everybody's learning together collaboratively.
It's so easy to go in with, you perhaps don't even realise you have your own agenda because you're so enthusiastic, you know, you're so passionate about assisting and, you know, supporting people. But taking that step back and actually listening to what, you know, the people you're working with, what they actually want to achieve, and then catering and, you know, crafting and moulding the skills that you have and the knowledge you have to the context that they need.
Over the years, I've had the pleasure of working with dozens of international consultants in education, and you have within international health and also with agricultural science and food security in my roles previously as well. And then we've also, in relation to our own nation within Australia, with regards to adult education, we've worked with dozens and dozens of highly skilled practitioners. But one thing is assured, those that are successful share Helen's views. You know, that they really do have an empathy for the cohort that's before them. And the cohort might be the cohort in the classroom. It might be the large faculty group that you're employed to uplift and to develop capacity into the future, to assist them to move forward in their own way. Or it might be international work. And the same principles apply. It's really having empathy for the people around you.
Yeah. So I hope you have enjoyed this discussion. It's good to reflect back and see what's been achieved in the past and to know that, you know, things do change over time, but they're not lost either. Our gains are still there as well as a globe.
Yeah, well said, well said.